gun you're toting, and even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me over and over and over.
You are listening to part 3 of Uranium Mining in Australia, a compiled program from the power and passion of Peter Peddle's regular NIMFM programs. So that should be very interesting. Stay tuned. There's also clips from media and from historical activism pasted together in this program. My name is Martin. I post-produced this program, and it is useful for anybody, non-profit, indie media radio, other community radios, or individuals.
Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me.
We, along with most Australians, do not want to see an increasing nuclearisation of our nation. And that is what is happening, both here at Kakadu and now, it seems, in other parts of the country as well, as the uranium mining industry picks up steam again. This is a direction that we do not believe is good for Australians, and we call upon this government and all future governments to repudiate the nuclearisation of Australia.
Today, we continue with the discussion on the Australian uranium mining industry. Although Australia does not have any nuclear power stations, as I speak, we have a far greater source of hazardous radioactive material than those countries that we export our uranium to. This hazardous source is the finely milled radioactive mine tailings, of which we are generating literally mountains of the stuff. Australia's uranium mine waste, 569 million tonnes for Olympic Dam alone, will create a health hazard for a period into the future equivalent to the time that life has existed on Earth so far, and will create radiation levels over a vast area in excess of what is deemed to be a safe exposure limit for a period twice as long as vertebrates have lived on Earth, and as long as multicellular organisms have existed. These tailings will be spread over a vast area because they are so finely milled and will not be contained against wind and water erosion, with only a 1.5 metre layer of clay and rock covering. The contamination is far more serious than the nuclear waste of the nuclear reactors because of its sheer volume and the irresponsible attitude towards safe long-term storage. The scientific advisers are generally under the employ of the mining companies. The mining companies, understandably, do not want a 1 billion-year contract to ensure that the millings remain safe, but want to sign the responsibility over to the government as soon as mining ceases. The government want all the proceeds from the mining revenue now, but they are not nuclear physicists and accept what the experts from the mining company tell them. In any case, there will be a change of government at some point at which it is no longer their responsibility. The regulations, the code of practice on management of radioactive wastes from the mining and milling of radioactive ores, 1982, provide for the South Australian government to resume responsibility and bear costs for all the uranium mines within the state shortly after mine closure. For the Ranger mine, these costs are estimated over time come to roughly $140 billion. The long-term scenario, hence, is death, disease, and a far greater cost than our uranium export earnings. We make billions today, but at the cost of forsaking the future of Australia.
This gentleman to my left was Mr. Devine. He works for ERA and he wishes to advise you of something, so listen up. Don't interrupt him because it's fairly important to a number of you people here at the present time.
And he's got to read it.
That's correct. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm a delegated representative of the local lawful occupier of this lease. As such, I now direct you to leave this lease immediately. I caution you that if you do not leave, you may be arrested for trespassing on this lease. Thank you. Okay, that's a direction to leave by the lawful occupier. Constitutional law.
Just listen, will you?
Quiet! Right, as the senior police officer, I'm now directing you to leave this lease. Right? If you don't, you will be arrested for the offence of trespass.
We're sitting here waiting for the divvy vans to arrive because we're about to be arrested for trespass. But we're not trespassing. We have permission to be here by the Mirarr people. So we're not guilty. ERA are the criminals.
Excuse me, you're under arrest. You're going to come with me?
The government continues to say that it's been excised. It's surrounded by Kakadu National Park. It's internationally recognised. This is the jewel in the crown of Australia's heritage listings. It's World Heritage listed for two values, for natural values and for cultural values. These values can't be sacrificed.
We have to make the noise loud and clear. Nuclear power is not the way to go. The mining company doesn't care about humanity.
The present practice of putting all the uranium mine tailings in a huge pile, in a tailings dam or an open pit, and covering them with 1.5 metre layer of clay and rocks doesn't incur much cost to the mining company. But as I pointed out last week, that is not an acceptable solution. Storage in old or specifically built mine shafts is a safer storage option. Compared with the open mine pit, it provides greater depth and better ways of sealing the deposit off. But that would incur greater costs to the mining company, who would argue vigorously against this option. The long-term death toll would be reduced by this practice, and that is what should happen to existing tailings. If the government won't press the mining company to at least engage in best practice, then public pressure must be applied. Turning nuclear waste into a kind of synthetic rock known as synrock and placing that matter in a deep mine shaft is practiced by some nuclear power stations, e.g. in Scandinavia. Synrock is very well known and therefore often thought to be a good storage refinement for underground storage of tailings. However, synrock is only adequate for small quantities, kilos rather than millions of tons. The only related storage technology for low-level, high-volume waste is the addition of cement to the tailings and the mixing of the tailings into concrete. However, the required long-term success for hundreds of thousands of years is a thousandfold beyond the reach of concrete. Because of the long-term hazard of every stage of the uranium cycle, from mining to transport to nuclear reactors and perhaps nuclear weapons, and finally to the disposing of the nuclear waste, are all unacceptable. Then possibly the whole industry should be closed down.
Come all the way from
That way some of us come from the coast and some inland and island come to support our countrymen here, all the Mira people.
Although there is no safe limit to radiation exposure, the accepted dose limit for members of the public continually exposed to radiation is 1 millisievert per year. The radioactive dose received by a person is measured in millisievert. This unit considers the biological effect of the radiation received. Where the person is exposed to different types and pathways of radiation, this dose limit applies to the sum of all the components of man-made radiation. The radiation from uranium tailings has at least 5 such components. In a first step, the permissible and or likely exposure from each component will be estimated as if the other 4 components were non-existent. Then the combined exposure from all the pathways aspects is calculated. An investigation into the risk of radiation exposure will typically focus on a critical group. The investigation will then focus on the dose contribution of all known radiation sources for this critical group. The critical group is the group of people deemed to be most exposed to the radiation. All the members of the critical group have a risk factor or exposure aspect in common. In the case of uranium tailings, the members of the critical group are those working and living right on top of the spread out tailings deposit. They compromise possibly future rural settlements of people who live from the produce they grow and drink the local groundwater. The radiation exposure of the critical group determines the necessary limitations to a project to make it comply with the standards or whether it can go ahead at all. By definition, the size of the critical group will be up to a few tens of persons. If only a couple of people were to be the most exposed, then they would not be considered as a critical group, and therefore not necessarily require an end or modification to a project. A large group of people with a common risk factor would have to be selected. In contrast, if a group of 100 people were to be the most exposed, this would not constitute a critical group, and a smaller group or a smaller subgroup with higher exposure has to then be selected. In our example, we select a group of people living right on top of the tailings, which by then have been spread out by erosion. Their lifestyle and activities, according to the definitions of the critical group, inflict a high dose on them. They are assumed to work directly with the tailings, such as digging them for landfill, building material, or whatever other use may be found in the future, and to live and sleep in a building which tends to accumulate the radon emanating from the ground, which consists mainly of exposed or eroded tailings. We then calculate the total radiation exposure of each member of this group of people, from which can be estimated by means of comparison with statistical evidence the rate of death from various cancers and radiation-related illnesses, and the rate of radiation-related birth defects. The maximum permissible quantity of inhaled tailings from Olympic Dam has been specified as 1.4 grains per year. This is just from one source, as if the other pathways would not contribute any further radiation. Therefore, the permissible dose is in fact considerably lower. Some of the exposure will relate to the capability of the tailings to become airborne for extensive periods. it has been found that the inhalation of tailings dust by the critical group will be between 30 and 150 grams per year, with an average of about 60 grams. For the concentration of the Olympic Dam tailings, this results in an annual dose contribution of about 40 millisieverts, or 40 times what is considered to be the so-called safe limit. After a few hundred years, it can be expected that humans not only work, grow food, and live near the tailings deposit, but also do all these things right on top of the tailings. Consequently, the ingestion of contaminated food will be a huge problem. As an example, at the uranium mill of Bukovo in Bulgaria, the fences around the contaminated area deteriorated and the area was in part reused for agriculture just 30 years after the mining ceased. Radium concentrations of up to 1,077 becquerels per kilogram were found in cereals grown in this area. The number of radioactive decays per second for a given material is measured in becquerels. Regular consumption of 1 kilogram per week of such a cereal would result in an annual dose of 74 millisieverts, while the admissible dose is only 1 millisievert. Were these cereals grown there some 250,000 years later, the annual dose to the consumer would be still some 8 times too high. In an example from Australia, the Ranger mine, the radium-226 contamination of mussels from 4 different locations downstream from the mine has been investigated. On average, 260 becquerels per kilogram have been measured for radium, resulting in 0.08 millisieverts per kilogram if ingested. The annual ingestion of 4 kilograms of mussel flesh, considered to be typical, would already constitute 32% of the permissible annual dose for the public. However, the average person in a tropical area consumes probably annually some 1,000 litres of water and some 500 kilograms of food, much of which may be contaminated as well. This indicates that in some areas near the mine, and especially for those people living mainly on bush tucker, the legal dose limit for the public is already now being transgressed. While both the tailings erosion and the radon release are still under control. After a few thousand years, when the tailings deposits have been spread out over a large area, the contamination will be increased substantially. For the critical group at Olympic Dam, we estimate an annual dose from ingestion of 25 millisieverts per year. That is 25 times the specified safe limit.
Because there's a crisis on our doorstep, we're digging deep holes in our heart. Uranium mining rapes a mother, say no, that's a start. No to mining, we're not signing. No to scarcity, poverty, reality.
The most dangerous isotope in the uranium tailings is radon-222. Dangerous because it is gaseous and carries 4 of the 6 alpha decays of the tailings. Because of its rather short half-life, hardly any radon escapes from the uranium ore in its natural location before mining. Most likely, the rock was originally buried deep in the ground. Even the deep pit mines at Ranger get the uranium ore on average some 100 metres deep out of the ground. The Olympic Dam mine is an underground mine, with the ore body being more than 300 metres below the surface. Even if this ore is only covered by sandy soil, at this depth, the radon escape is reduced many trillion times. In contrast, the escape of radon from the milled tailings will eventually be comparatively unobstructed, while initially the tailings are saturated with water and later covered with soil to reduce the radon escape, eventually they will dehydrate and become exposed by erosion. For somebody living right on top of the eventually spread out tailings, a dose of 300 millisieverts appears likely. This is 300 times the considered safe limit. Over the very long time span involved, the deposit in a tailings dam will certainly be spread around the Andamooka and Lake Torrens floodplains by the water and carried around by the wind to great distances. These spread-out tailings offer very little resistance to the radon escape and would thus render the entire area unsafe for habitation. Uranium-238 and its decay products, thorium-230 and radium-226, are all water-soluble, especially under the acidic conditions of the Olympic Dam tailings. They can enter the groundwater and the surface water from the tailings dam as well as from any accumulation of eroded tailings. Radon, a decay product of radium and indirectly of thorium and uranium, continually arises from any uranium, thorium and radium contamination. Therefore, not only the tailings, but with them, the emanation of radon gas is spread with contaminated water.
Veruca, okay, that's a good one. Johnny Howard, you're a pain in the ass. Worse than a Veruca. We won't let you get away with mining Jabaluka. I'll say it again and again and again and again like a street spruka. We're not gonna let you mine Jabaluka.
When uranium is extracted from the ore, a certain percentage will always escape extraction and remain in the tailings. That's usually between 1 and 5%. The residual uranium and its radioactive decay products will contaminate the tailings for billions of years. Uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. For Ranger, this residual uranium amounts to close to an excessive 10% of the ore's uranium content. For Olympic Dam, the residual uranium is specified as an extreme 30%, probably to be reduced to 23% with post-column extraction. This residual uranium will increase the alpha radiation of the tailings right from the moment of deposition by 2.2% for Ranger and by 5% for Oxby, due to the two uranium isotopes, U-238 and U-234, and within some 500,000 years by another 10% and 23%, respectively, of the peak value of the tailings radiation, due to the quasi-permanent maintenance of the complete uranium decay chain from this pool of residual uranium. The resulting additional radioactivity of 12.2% for Ranger and 28% for Roxby will be near permanent. After 1 billion years, 10% and 24% respectively. Like the rest of the tailings, the uranium is finely milled. Consequently, this alpha radiation is several million times more detrimental than it was in the original uranium ore. In the very long term, the residual uranium and its decay products will be the major cause of the future death toll from uranium tailings, due to the extremely long activity times involved. The combined radiation exposure is the total of all those contributions for the critical group, which would peak at 400 millisieverts or 384 millisieverts, excluding the residual uranium content. Allowing for the effect of the slowly diminishing radiation combined with the accelerating erosion and dispersion, the exposure profile for the critical group could be some 50 times above the legal dose limit in 1,000 years, 400 times above the legal dose limit in 20,000 years, 300 times above the legal dose limit in 60,000 years, 210 times above the legal dose limit in 100,000 years, 90 times above the legal dose limit in 1 million years, 80 times above the legal dose limit in 1 billion years, and equal to the legal dose limit in 20 billion years. While the dose to the individual future human for the critical group reaches its peak in about 20,000 years, the actual yearly death toll reaches its peak in about 100,000 to 150,000 years as the spreading contamination reaches more and more people. The estimated radiation dose from the tailings requires safe storage for the tailings for billions of years.
My cranium can't comprehend the fact, the way and the degree in which this land has been attacked. Contact, settlement, no, it was invasion. Ask the Mirar people about reconciliation. It isn't about colour, it's about who has the power. Who's poisoning the land, do not sit back and just allow it. The government's compassionate like a big bazooka. So are you gonna let them mind your beluga? No way!
The nuclear industry is often seen as antagonistic to democracy and human rights. A free society is a big threat to this industry, which is so dependent on cover-up and disinformation. This is because of its horrific threat against future generations, its ongoing polluting work practices. Most contamination testing is being conducted by the companies themselves. Its disastrous long-term effects on the national economy. Its dependence on the silent scientific and academic community, and its potential exposure to astronomical damages claims. The ever-expanding scale of potential destruction is so far-reaching that the signature of the ICRP on the truncation rules might cost many times more future lives than there are currently on our planet. Our society has a criminal law to deter and punish those who cause the death of a human. This is a generally accepted means of protecting human lives. However, a short reflection on history makes it clear that most killings have not been caused by individuals, but by governments. Governments can commit crimes by legislative processes. Laws that permit uranium mining are laws that commit crimes against present and future generations. Therefore, we need to work for the national and international protection for the dignity of human life. On the national level, such a protection within the Constitution could override acts and laws by government and parliament. The deterrent function of criminal law has to be extended to those scientists, politicians, and bureaucrats who facilitate such crimes by bending the truth, by manipulating, or just by being silent in the face of such pending crimes. To deal with the multinational uranium mining companies and their international regulator, the International Trial on the Uranium Mining Holocaust, similar to the Nuremberg trials, may be needed.
You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
You have been listening to part 3 of the Uranium Mining in Australia with Peter Peddle's program The Power and the Passion, part 3. So stay tuned, there will be part 4 coming soon. You can also find other programs on nimbimradiomedia.libsyn.com, which is our preferred MP3 host for community radio NIM FM in Nimbim, Australia.
Don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.